There are a lot of issues to dive into in the race for Cincinnati City Council and a lot of candidates on the ballot. I'm Nick Swartzell, filling in for Lucy May. Today on Cincinnati Edition, we talk to two of those candidates. But first, I'm joined by WVXU local government reporter Becca Costello. Thanks for being here, Becca.
Happy to be here.
Now, let's just dive right into this, right? There are 26 registered candidates and one person running a write-in campaign for city council this year. That seems like a lot. How does that compare to past recent council elections?
So it's pretty interesting. It does feel like a lot. It's a lot to choose between. Last election was in 2023. We had a record low number of candidates that year, only 10 candidates for 9 seats. And then the 2 years before that, the next most recent city council election in 2021, we had a record high number of candidates, 35 candidates on the ballot. So we've had a couple of interesting recent cycles. Usually we're kind of in the middle of those numbers and not, you know, either record high or record low. But this year with 26 candidates on the ballot, and then, as you said, a certified write-in candidate making 27 candidates total, not as high as we've had in some recent elections, but certainly a big difference compared to 2 years ago.
Sure. And we're going to dive into maybe some of the issues that are driving that high level of candidacy in a minute. But first, I want you to give us the lay of the land a little bit. Right now, council is all Democrats, but the field running for the 9 seats this time around is a lot broader. Tell us about that. What are the party affiliations and ideological perspectives these candidates are bringing?
Yeah, so there are 9 endorsed Democrats again this year. All of those are incumbents except for one. Ryan James is running on that endorsed slate, and that's because current Councilmember Victoria Parks is not running for re-election. There are several other Democrats without that official endorsement also running in this race. There are 5 candidates endorsed by the Charter Committee. So among those endorsements of the 5, there's a mix of Democrats and Republicans. Now, that's a change. In 2021, the Charter Committee endorsed a full slate of 9 candidates. So it's a strategic move to kind of pare that down here in 2025. And there are 3 candidates endorsed by the Republicans, a few independent candidates or unaffiliated candidates. One really significant one there is Christopher Smitherman. He has previously won a seat on council as an independent. The Republican Party did invite him to seek their endorsement. He opted not to do that. And then one other main difference in terms of the political ideology here in 2021, when we had 35 candidates on the ballot, we also saw endorsements from the Green Party, and we haven't seen that either in 2023 or this year in 2025.
Yeah, interesting. A lot to take in there. We're going to get back to the Charter Committee here in a minute, but one little thing we should point out. Technically, the race is nonpartisan. What does that mean?
Yeah, so the race is nonpartisan in that the candidates will not see a party affiliation on the ballot. So that's different than many statewide races or federal races. If you vote for president, for example, you can see which party affiliation the candidates are with. But for city council race, there is no party on the ballot. So officially nonpartisan. Now, it is technically nonpartisan, but it is practically a very partisan race. Of course, we all know this, that Democratic endorsement slate in particular has proved to be very powerful in the last 2 elections. In 2021, 8 out of 9 endorsed Democrats won. In 2023, all 9 candidates who won a seat were endorsed Democrats. So that has a lot of power there. Now, that doesn't mean that candidates outside of that have no chance. It just means that there's a significant battle to be fought there against the Democratic Party slate.
Sure. So you won't see the candidate's party affiliation on the ballot, but you'll see it on party materials and things like
that. That's right. And many voters may get maybe handed a slate of party endorsed slate as they walk into the polling place, or they'll receive one in the mail ahead of time. So there's still a lot of influence from the political parties on this race.
Sure. So let's dive into something we have here locally that, you know, other places maybe don't have, which is the Charter Committee. Who is that, and who have they endorsed?
Yeah, so the Charter Committee actually just celebrated its 100th anniversary last year in 2024. So this is a technically not a political party, but functions as one in many ways locally, but was established to fight corruption at the city government level 100 years ago. They have kind of waxed and waned in terms of influence and how involved they are, how many active members they may have at various points over the last century. Made a little bit of a comeback in 2021 in response to the serious corruption issues that the city was facing at that time. Of course, that was not long after 3 sitting city council members had been arrested on corruption charges. Now, this time around, they were a bit less influential in 2023. Of course, that was a bit of a smaller race. Now we're seeing a bit more of a comeback here. some of the things that they have endorsed in terms of party, or sorry, in terms of policy issues is they've taken a stand to repeal and replace connected communities, which is, of course, the comprehensive zoning reform that passed last summer and has been somewhat controversial. That's kind of one of their main issues. They've also had a lot to say about the Hyde Park Square development issue, which has come up a lot in recent months. So those are some of the issues. Now, as I mentioned earlier, they've endorsed a mix of historically Democratic and Republican candidates. And so, again, this idea is that they're not a political party is how they're presenting themselves, but that they are running on certain issues. So the candidates that they have endorsed include former council member Steve Gooden, who was appointed to council a few years ago after that first wave of, after that wave of corruption in 2021. He was appointed in 2020, did not win his seat for election in the next election in 2021. Another former council member, Lakeita Cole, who is a Democrat, and then a couple of folks who have not been in public office before, and so maybe less familiar names.
Ah, I see. So how does the Charter Committee interact with the local Democratic and Republican parties? Is there any sort of like cross endorsement that happens, or how does that all work out?
No longer. So this is a somewhat recent change as well. There were times when there may be cross endorsements. So Liz Keating is an example as a candidate who in 2021 and in 2023 was endorsed by both the Republican Party and the Charter Committee. And there it used to be the case that the Democrats would cross endorse as well. The Democratic Party now has a policy that they will not allow candidates to accept endorsement from both the local Democratic Party and the Charter Committee, so there's no overlap there any longer. In terms of, you know, how they interact with each other, it's interesting because I know we're going to talk more about the issues here in just a little bit, but we're seeing a lot of the same complaints, I'll say, or concerns maybe is a better word, about things like development from people in all of the political parties or committees. So I see a lot of overlap in terms of some of the concern, but that doesn't mean that we're seeing official collaboration between them, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. We're talking about the crowded Cincinnati City Council race with reporter Becca Costello. We'll hear from two of the candidates in just a few minutes. So let's dive into these issues, right? Give us a brief overview of like kind of the major things driving this council election.
Yeah, I would narrow it down to two main things. One is development and one is crime. Development, of course, we've already mentioned both of the major issues there, the connected community zoning reform, which passed the mostly the fully Democratic council last year on a 6-3 vote. But also the Hyde Park Square development, which passed on a 7-2 vote. So the current council, all Democrats, are not completely on the same page on either of these issues. But that is something that we're hearing a lot about, folks saying they feel like the current council and city administration is not listening to residents, that there've been a lot of there's been a lot of vocal pushback on issues like this, and they're feeling like they're not being taken seriously at council. So that's one major one. And there's obviously a lot of kind of sub points in there that, you know, depending on the neighborhood, folks might have different opinions on. The other is crime, and that's really just because of the way that crime has been reported on and talked about on social media in particular this summer. It's been a really interesting summer. There's always a bit of an uptick in crime. That was true this year, perhaps more so than other summers that we can look back on the data. But in particular, separate from the data, some very high-profile incidents that have gotten a lot of media attention, including nationally. And that has really driven this discussion about public safety and is Cincinnati a safe place to live and visit? And there are many different opinions on that question.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was going to be my next question was perceptions about crime and the reality, right? So we know that it's more than just about data. We've heard that from officials. But what does the crime data tell us about public safety in the city?
So the one thing I'll say is crime data changes constantly. Those numbers are going to be different day to day when you look at it. So the best way to look at crime data is to look at long-term trends. So we're looking at perhaps year to date. We're already almost in October. So a year to date number does give us a little bit more of a better picture compared to like if we're looking at year to date numbers in February, that's not very useful. But at this point in the year, year to date, comparing to last year and comparing to the 3-year average. And so the most recent data does show slight decreases citywide in both violent crime and property crime compared to this time last year and to the 3-year average. Those numbers vary wildly depending on the neighborhood we're talking about. And even within neighborhoods, depending on the specific block we might be talking about. A lot of violent crime in particular happens in hotspots in the city that could be one or two city blocks in a specific neighborhood, and those could really be driving the numbers up. Also, a lot of the increase that we have talked about this summer has been in property crimes, particularly theft from auto and auto theft. So those are two of the crimes that have really kind of, I don't want to say skewed the numbers, but when you look at an increase, that it's often an increase in those crimes that we're talking about in terms of the increase. But again, it varies so much depending on the neighborhood. Downtown, Over the Rhine, and the Banks have all seen more significant increases in crime, including violent crime, at various points throughout the year.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense. I want to go back for just a second when we were talking about kind of the major issues, and we talked about connected communities too. Mm-hmm. What do you think is driving this sort of political energy around this topic? Right, like on the surface, it's this sort of wonky zoning issue, right? Mm-hmm. Like when you look at it, but it's made people very, very. They feel it. What are they feeling, you think?
That's a really good question. I think there's. I'm going to use this word, and I want to preface that I'm not using this dismissively, but I think there's a fear that residents have about their neighborhoods changing without their input or contrary to their input in some cases. I think people are cautious about what their neighborhood will look like if more people move in. If, you know, for example, my single family neighborhood that is close to a transit corridor, you know, maybe there's a bunch of new apartment buildings or there that could happen because of the zoning change. And that's a concern because of traffic, pedestrian safety, that kind of thing. So what's interesting is there really haven't been many, I think only one or two projects that have benefited from connected community zoning change in the year plus since it was passed. So it hasn't been the case that we've seen a ton of projects pop up that are, you know, of a concerning size or whatever. But the concern is still there. And I think it was really exacerbated by the Hyde Park Square development because we saw a community very vocally opposed to a project that moved forward anyway. Of course, that has been somewhat halted now. You can learn more at WVXU.org. But I think that became a bit of a rallying cry for folks who are concerned about connected communities, where they say, here is something that this is exactly what we were afraid of, and this is what could be happening in our own community. And so it really became a galvanizing effect for people across all neighborhoods, or many neighborhoods in Cincinnati.
Sure. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. So how will this council and mayoral election impact people outside the city? Are there issues that could be important for people like throughout the region?
Yeah, I think both of the issues we've talked about, development and crime, are both issues that are relevant to folks anywhere. First of all, rising rent prices. This is a concern for city officials, but it's also a concern for officials in any municipality anywhere in Greater Cincinnati. Because when someone is for the most part looking for a place to live, they're not looking in one specific municipality. They're looking for the cheapest place or the most affordable place in the area. And so I think the city's efforts to zone and increase housing and make it easier to develop housing can have an impact on folks who are in the area looking for cheaper housing. That's a complicated issue, but I do think it's relevant. With crime, I think the biggest concern, or one of the big concerns here, you know, when we talk about an increase in crime, especially downtown, Over the Rhine, and at the Banks, which are the areas where people visit, people who live outside the city are coming to visit, those are the places they're going. It's often described as the front porch of the city. So if crime is up in those areas and people outside the city are concerned about that, and for that reason, stop coming to visit, stop spending their money, stop staying in hotels downtown, and, you know, encourage others to stop doing that as well. I think that is a concern for Cincinnati officials, but also if this is one of the biggest entertainment areas in the area and people suddenly don't want to visit anymore, I think that's a significant issue.
Yeah. I'm going to do something very unfair right now. I'm going to ask you to tell me about how the city's budget is going to impact this election in the next minute, less than a minute, please.
I'll be honest. I don't think it's going to have much of an effect on voters. I think it's a very serious issue that people should be concerned about, but it feels far away from people. I think that most people aren't paying attention to the projected deficit, don't have a full grasp or understanding of how the budget works. Obviously, some voters are very tuned in and will be very concerned about that, but I think for the average voter, some more pressing issues like development and crime are going to be much more top of mind when they go to the polling place.
I see. What about streets, though?
Stop throwing questions at me, Nick. No, I think that's true. I think, you know, if you connect streets like street paving and things like that and potholes to a budget issue, I think most people don't. I think a lot of people see that and say the city is mismanaging the money and see it less as the city needs more money for that. However, several candidates that we surveyed for city council have supported an increase to the income tax, which is a whole other can of worms that we can't get into right now. But there are some candidates who have said, you know, the city is in serious trouble financially, and raising the income taxes is one way that we might need to do that. Of course, that would need to be approved by city voters. It's not something council could do unilaterally.
Got it. Yeah. Becca Costello, thank you for this great overview. You're a local government reporter. We are always glad that you're here helping us understand this stuff. Thanks for being here.
Happy to be here, Nick. Thank you.
Up next, we meet with candidate Don Johnson. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Nick Swartzell, filling in for Lucy May. The first in our two-week series of candidate interviews is Dawn Johnson. She's North Avondale Neighborhood Association president and is endorsed by the Charter Committee. Ms. Johnson, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you for having me.
We're glad you're here. Due to time constraints, we're not going to be taking calls today, but I do have some questions for you, Dawn. So in a few sentences, just kind of give us a little introduction of yourself and why you're running for council.
Yeah, so first and foremost, I'm a lifelong Cincinnatian. I'm a mom, I'm a doula, and like you mentioned, I am the only candidate out of all 26 candidates that is currently a president of my community council in North Avondale.
Great. So I want to dive right into some issues here. Okay. And the first one I want to talk about is something I think you're familiar with. Councils face some accusations of not listening to the community on issues like the Connected Communities zoning reform in 2024 and the Hyde Park Square development in 2025. As a member of City Council, how would you balance community input with the desire to add housing? I know that you've kind of addressed some of this in North Avondale.
Yes, I have. You know, we need to repeal and replace Connected Communities first and foremost. People are frustrated. They feel ignored. And, you know, it's really just about, you know, listening to the people and not having the development happening around them and to them. It should be happening with them. So, you know, the community engagement with the Connected Communities, for example, it was very poor. People did not feel like they were heard. They had us writing on Post-its. Where are the Post-its? You know, how can we really measure, you know, what we've said and what we've wanted on a Post-it? Like, how do we know that they listened, you know? And clearly they didn't because they passed it. So, you know, it's having better engagement, very intentional engagement that where people feel heard.
Yeah, yeah. Briefly, what does that look like to you? What does a different kind of engagement look like?
It's coming to the community council meetings. It's having a discussion with us. Hey, we have a new development. You know, we have a new partner in the neighborhood. I'm going to use renting partnerships, for example, because I love them. Renting partnerships. They want to have, you know, they want to develop a new apartment in North Avondale. How do you guys feel about it? What are your needs? Like, what are some things that you are concerned about with a development like this? And just asking us questions, asking about our feedback, and not looking at that as a problem or like it's something that's holding us back. You know, it's just important to talk to the people who have to live and work in a space where there's new developments. I mean, it's only fair. So,
yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. In this last term, the mayor and city council seats have all been held by Democrats. How do you think this dynamic has played out? And would you work with fellow council members? How would you work with fellow council members if you were elected?
So, you know, I am an independent. And I have already been working with the council. I've worked with Jan Michelle on a task force committee to come up with some other ideas for the Connected Communities legislation. And I would just keep doing that. You know, honestly, it's really about what are our morals and, you know, what can we agree on? How can we find common ground? So, you know, I do feel like there's a lot of top-down politics happening. I do feel like there's not a lot of opposition occurring down there. And, you know, that doesn't really make for a well-rounded decision-making when you just have people that are just always agreeing with the mayor. So there definitely needs to be some shakeup down there at council.
Sure. You mentioned the independent status, right? Like, why is that important to you?
You know, that's because I am right down the middle. I am, and seeing this leadership really showed me that having an independent stance and being progressive is important, and it's what the community needs.
Sure. There are neighbors who are worried about crime, and there's also been national attention on the city in terms of crime, and criticism of how city leaders have responded to that.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think city council should work to reduce crime and also address the public perception and concern about safety?
Okay, that's a great question. So, everybody's worried about safety. I think that we were handled very poorly this year. They did not do a lot of planning. You can't be in the middle of the summer and start scrambling and say, hey, let's come up with a curfew. Let's stop the red bikes. Let's stop the food trucks. Why are you doing this right now? It's a little too late. Start planning right now for next summer so that you have programming, so that you have the people in place. You know that we have these events every year. So, just plan better. And I just think that was just handled really, really bad. In terms of safety, I take a holistic view on safety. Yes, we do need more police officers because a lot of them are retiring. So we need that. On the other hand, I think that we need more resources for our youth, for example. I remember when I was younger, they had a lot of programming downtown during the summer. They had like a community talent show. Where's that? Get the kids excited and maybe, we have a talent show and they can win some money or, come up with an incubator, a good idea for the kids to come up with or a problem for the kids to come up with. And if they win, they get some money. Like, get them excited about being in our community instead of not having anything to do and then just focusing on punishment and getting them back into the house. Get them excited.
Sure. I want to ask you one more question about public safety, and we'll move on to some other issues.
Okay.
City Council voted to add an additional $5.4 million to the public safety kind of budget, the spending that they're going to spend on, police and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Do you agree with that in the kind of the way that played out, or would you put a different solution forward?
Resources are definitely needed, but, prevention pays off. So, if you think about it like this, every $1 invested saves $7. In terms of like how we respond to like trauma and emergencies, we're saving a lot more money through prevention. And so, I think that we need to fund more like trauma recovery. I think the allocation is what we need to focus on. I don't think that we're being intentional about helping the youth with trauma and their responses to trauma, because what we do know is that if you're exposed to trauma, you're 10 times likely to commit a crime. So what are we doing to really help these youth and address these things head on so that they're not feeling left alone and up to their own devices and committing crime? So I think it's the way that we need to look at it, and we need to reallocate the budget.
I'm talking with Cincinnati City Council candidate Don Johnson. So the federal stimulus funds that the city was getting over the last few years, those have been depleted, and the city is facing projected budget deficits over the next few years. What do you think City Council needs to do to ensure financial stability for the city?
That's a great question. So, my first question is, where's the railroad money? Okay, why are we saying that we're broke when we just had this like multi-billion-dollar deal? Like, what's going on? So, and that's one of the reasons I need to get in there. I want to see what's going on. How are we crying broke when we just voted to have this money allocated? And I know that was for infrastructure and things of that nature, but even still, well, what happened during the winter when we needed the when we needed the resources? So I don't understand why they're saying that we don't have the money. Where is it? That's my question.
It's funny you mention winter storms, because that's my next question. How would you help prepare for the city? How would you help prepare the city for major weather events should you be elected to council? What are some of the things you're going to do if you got in there?
Okay, so first and foremost, like, Minneapolis was able to cut their storm delays by 40%. And with emergency neighborhood hubs. So that's one of the things that I'm thinking of. Like, we need hubs in our various neighborhoods. We need better infrastructure for, like, early warnings and for warming centers. And, you know, we need to plan ahead. Again, we need to plan ahead. We don't need to wait until winter to figure it out. We're kind of like seeing a pattern here. You know, we're being more reactive than proactive. So it's saying, you know, what do we predict for the winter, and how can we get ready and make sure that we're ready, and how can we find the funds to allocate what is needed? So I think it's just, I'm glad you're asking the question now, because they need to be asking themselves this question and planning accordingly.
Sure. So there's been a lot of conversation over the years in Cincinnati and in neighboring cities about the role of the mayor, how strong a mayor should be, right? Council, that's a big part of the job, is to work with the mayor, right? So mm-hmm. what do you see as the proper role of the mayor, and, you know, like, what level of strength should the mayor have?
Well, right now he is definitely a strong mayor. I think Aftab is a good guy. You know, that he has really good qualities. I see him in the community. I see that he's active. I think that he has good intentions. But also, you know, I think that his role is to listen more to the community members. So just because you come to a festival and you're shaking hands with everybody, are you really talking to the people? Are you really asking them what they need? Are you really meeting people where they are? And I just don't see that happening right now. Like, I just think that he's lost his way a little bit, because he just is not being responsive to the people. Why are you on vacation during the busiest weekend, you know, of the summer? Why did you do that? Why weren't you prepared? Why weren't you encouraging council and the manager to be prepared for these events over the summer that occur annually? So, you know, it's planning ahead, it's being involved, it's making sure that you're staying focused on what's important, which is us, the residents of Cincinnati. So, and not necessarily, I mean, yeah, granted, everybody needs vacation, but come on, really? During the busiest time of the summer?
So, in terms of the kind of broader, like, systemic thing, though,
okay,
like, whoever the mayor is,
okay,
briefly, how much say should they have, and what will you do on council to be kind of a counterweight, right, to make sure that the people are heard, you know, in that way?
I think that the mayor needs to, it's the responsibility of the mayor to push for more, like, structured partnerships between mayor and council. I think that it is, you know, really important for him to just concentrate the power around the city better, give more of the organizations that are built to help and give resources to the residents of Cincinnati, make sure that they are properly funded. You know, the role of the mayor is to make sure that we're okay. I mean, I stand by that. He needs to he just needs to be more involved in what's going on, but also not just trying to control it. He needs to be asking the community what they want and getting their input. So it needs to be more of a conversation than him just dictating what needs to be done, or, you know, just infringing on or imposing his views and what his agenda is on people in the community. He needs to listen more.
Sure. This question, we've talked about some big issues.
Okay.
Is there one that's on your radar that you feel like needs to be addressed that hasn't been addressed? And briefly, we just got a couple more minutes here.
Okay, great. So, yeah, I think, again, it's trust. The people don't have a lot of trust in council right now. And it's like any relationship. Every relationship is built on trust. And that is very concerning to me, that we have a community that feels let down. Even on their worst day, they feel like they're not being listened to. They feel like they're not being cared for. And that is absolutely very concerning. We need to invest in our youth. That's also something that's on my mind. I want to create more programming. I think that our nonprofit infrastructure should be more organized and efficient. I believe our 311 system needs to be more efficient. We need more tech-driven solutions to really help us to be more efficient and to serve our community better. So trust is big. It's trust, it's youth, it's safety, it's wellness.
Sure. You kind of touched on this in your answer, but I'm going to ask it straight out, and maybe there's some other things that come to mind. We got, you know, a little bit of time to talk about it. If elected, what do you plan to introduce and accomplish during the next 2 years on council?
So, you know, first and foremost, again, building the trust in the community, working with the councils, repeal and replace connected communities. You know, I want to make sure that we have more, a better and more intentional trauma response system built into the schools. I also want to create a youth council that gives us half a vote on council. And, you know, I want to hear the voice of the youth. I think that it's really important to hear them and to have them involved in some of the decision making. I want to begin just coming up with better ways that we can look at affordable housing and get people keys, get people home ownership, and making sure that we're well mentally, physically, and emotionally.
Dawn Johnson, thank you for joining us to discuss your candidacy for Cincinnati City Council. Up next, I sit down with candidate Gary Favors. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Nick Swartzell, filling in for Lucy May. Gary Favors is an Avondale resident running for Cincinnati City Council. He's endorsed by the Hamilton County Republican Party. He joins me now. Welcome to the show, Gary.
Thank you for having me.
Due to time constraints, we're not taking calls today, but I've got some questions for Gary that we're going to get into. So we need to get into some issues, but first I want to ask you to introduce yourself in a few sentences. Tell us briefly about yourself and why you're running for council.
Born and raised in Cincinnati, went to Roger Bacon High School, attended grade school at St. Francis Serif School downtown, went off to college at Carson Newman College, where I graduated back in the early 90s, then served in the U.S. Army, did a tour of duty in the Gulf War. So I've spent 12 years in the military serving my country.
Thank you for your service. I'm going to get right into these questions about some issues, some policy here. First, I want to talk a little bit about politics. In the last term, the mayor and city council seats have all been held by Democrats, right? How do you think this dynamic has played out, and how would you work with fellow council members if you are elected?
Well, if elected, you have to be able to work across the aisle, being able to work with everyone as an educator. I have to work with parents, I have to work with students, I have to work with many constituents as an educator. So working across the aisle, working with Democrats would be part of my job, is to work with everyone to help this city move forward, is what I see we need to do.
Sure. Do you feel like the city needs more representation from different parties and different ideological
absolutely.
Perspectives?
Yeah. Absolutely. Grew up in a two-parent house, had a mom and dad. They stressed my job was purely education. There was nothing else I had to worry about. My job was to get a good education, graduate, go to college, and then off in the military to serve my country. And now I want to serve this city.
Yeah. So one of the big issues that we've been hearing a lot about is public safety. There are a lot of neighbors who are worried about crime, and there has also been national attention on the city in terms of the city's crime rates and some specific incidents. And there's been some criticism of city leaders and how they've responded. How do you think city council should work to reduce crime and also address the public perception concerns about safety?
Well, one of the things that we saw, downtown was very much a logistical nightmare of having three events go on at the same time. It was just, in my opinion, poor planning on many parts. Safety in this city, in my opinion, is top priority. Having enough police officers who walk the beat, who are out of their cars, building relationships with people is key. So public safety is one of my number one issues. I was endorsed by the FOP. So that should say that safety is my top priority in this city, that everyone feels safe.
Sure. Now let's dive in a little bit on some of the issues a little bit more. So the council recently voted to approve an additional $5.4 million for public safety. They did that and you appropriated it in various places. Do you agree with that move? And what solutions would you put forward if you were a council member?
I agree with the move in regards to getting more manpower to our police, but it has to be a balanced approach. The last op-ed article that I wrote in the Inquirer sort of said we're doing more for police, but we also have to do more for our firefighters. You have to balance both. You can't have one having all the necessary tools and not having the firefighters have the necessary tools to do their job, because they work in tangent. Police and fire work together. So that would be my only – but then they went back and passed another ordinance for our firefighters. So it should have been done a one and all, done and done with it. But again, I think that type of move should have been just for both police and firefighters.
Sure. Yeah. And in this sort of debate about how this $5.4 million was going to get spent, there was some conversation about, you know, how much was going to go for like police overtime for visibility, right? And then like technology, like drone programs and cameras and things like that. And then some other folks on council were arguing for like a longer term approach, taking into account like the systemic issues that might cause crime and you know, the trauma that people experience. Where do you land on that? Are you what's your priority in that?
Well, I think we need police visibility. Don't get me wrong, but we need police engaging with the community and the neighborhoods. Building relationships, as I said before, is key in deterring crime. Building relationships with businesses is key. My thing is, our police have been short of manpower. That's why we've had the conundrum of issues in the city with what we've seen. They've been short, and it never has been addressed till now. And that's why we need a balance, Republicans and Democrats. You can't have a council that has only one-sided of not just representing one party. There needs to be a balance.
So part of that manpower issue was budget, right? And part of it is also there's a difficulty in recruiting candidates sometimes. How would you address that part of it?
Yeah, in my op-ed article I did in the Inquirer, it suggested looking at a variety of ways, looking at high schools, getting young people interested in the profession, looking at military police who are folks who are retiring from the military, who may want to join forces with our police agency. A number of things that can be done, but I think, again, it's a tough job. You're talking about putting your life on the line. You're talking about the possibility of not seeing family and friends and loved ones in this position as an officer. It's a tough job, and you have to, one, increase the pay. The pay is low. We need to look at that. And so a number of things that I listed of how to, you know, recruit early enough to get young people interested.
Sure. I'm speaking with Cincinnati City Council candidate Gary Favors. Now, Gary, you're a longtime educator. I think you ran for Board of Education at one point. How do you see the interplay between, you know, city council and city government and Cincinnati Public School District?
Well, I see it in tangent. Both working together to address our young people and making sure they get educated, and making sure the city is a place that they would want to stay or come back, just like I did, a place where they can see themselves raising a family. I think the two should be in tangent, the city and our public school system.
Sure. Let's move on to talk about an important issue that I think some people maybe don't pay as much attention to as they should, but the city budget, right? With the federal stimulus now depleted, we've been getting that for a few years and we're not going to get it in the future. The city's facing some projected budget deficits over the next few years. What do you think city council needs to do to ensure financial stability?
I think we need to look at where the money is going, where we can cut, where we can really balance the budget, to look at a deficit, which is troubling because of the fact that, you know, I think like the previous guest said, we've sold the railroad. Where is that money going? People have asked me, where is that money going? And really digging into the numbers and figuring out what's happening with the dollars to come up with a deficit.
Sure. Now, do you feel like there are ways in which this is really apparent to folks? Like, I'd say like the condition of the streets and stuff. Is that something that you think constituents or people that might vote for you or other candidates are going to respond to, that they're connecting these things?
Yes. I think one of the things, as I've heard and been out in the communities, that the streets, having potholes fixed, some of the basic things I think that should be happening hasn't happened and continues not to happen in those basic services that we all expect and I expect as a taxpayer.
Sure. And just to connect some dots, that railroad money is supposed to be used for infrastructure, and it takes a couple years for it to get through, and it's just starting to come through. But I think there are a lot of people who are questioning, like, why aren't our roads in better condition, right?
Yes.
So I'm going to stay on the streets and roads issue here for a second. The city faced criticism for this year's winter storm and response time. You probably remember that. How would you help prepare the city for major weather events?
Well, let me go back to sort of your question, strong mayor, a city manager. The role of a city manager is to ensure that our streets, the snow removal, all of that, that falls under the jurisdiction of a city manager. I think there has been some challenges there with the city manager, but I think we need someone that can lead, someone that can address these, because a lot of what we're talking about, in all practicality, falls under the city manager's purview. And so when these things are not done, we need to make sure as city council folks that we're holding people accountable. That's the bottom line of it, is holding people accountable and not just having a title.
Sure. So, and I asked this to the last person, I'm going to ask you, what do you think the proper role for the mayor is? Like, how much power should a mayor have? As a person who wants to be a council member, you know, you're vying for a job kind of keeping that in check in some ways, but also working with that mayor. So what's your thought on that? How much strength does a mayor have?
Well, I think the mayor needs to have some strength in the play in the city. And I don't, I think going back to the days where I think council made the decision who would be the next mayor. I really think the bottom line of it is a strong city manager, because the city manager is responsible for negotiating contracts, negotiating a lot of tough things, and you need to make sure you have the right person in that seat to do the job. Hmm. So, and the mayor is, in the past has been just sort of a figurehead. Again, the city manager is the one that really runs the city.
Sure. In the last few minutes we have left, I want to get to another big issue that has been, I think, really driving this election season. Council has faced these accusations, right, of not really listening to people in communities on the connected communities issue, the zoning reform in 2024, and the Hyde Park Square development this year. As a member of City Council, how would you balance that community input, like that need for people to feel like they have a say in their neighborhoods, with the desire to, say, add housing or do other things that maybe benefit the city as a whole?
I think we always need to listen to the city. I think we need to get behind the chamber walls of City Hall and go out to neighborhoods and host meetings, to hear from them, because in order to move this city forward, you have to listen to the people and, again, try to understand that there are communities that have been longstanding in the city that deserve, all of our 52 neighborhoods deserve the best. But when they're not listened to, when they're not heard, we have what we have in Hyde Park. We have what we have in different neighborhoods. All 52 neighborhoods should be given equal resources. And sometimes that doesn't happen. If you look at Hyde Park, if you look at Avondale, all neighborhoods need to be given adequate resources.
Sure. Some of the things at the core of like connected communities, for instance, was maybe a discomfort with the idea that your neighborhood might change, right? Do you think there's room for things like zoning reform? What's that? That tension is tough to work out, isn't it?
Yeah, and it goes back to what you said. Listening to the folks in the community is so key. You know, what do they want for their communities? What do they need for their communities? Pushing an agenda that may not fit their community is not something that I'm for. I'm for development, but if the rising up of a neighborhood, they're not for it, I don't think we should force it, because there are other neighborhoods that may want that, what they don't want. So we have to balance it.
Yeah. Briefly, if elected, what do you plan to introduce and accomplish during the next 2 years on council?
Public safety, pedestrian safety around our schools, and housing, affordable housing, are my three top priorities.
I see. Tell me a little bit more, just in the next 30 seconds, about how you want to get into each of those.
Well, I think we've started the conversations with public safety right now in the current council. I would like to continue to expand working with the police department, working with our fire department, and again, working with these agencies along with the city manager. How do we continue to build the momentum that has been started to move things forward?
Yeah. I've been speaking with Cincinnati City Council candidate Gary Favors. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Tune in all this week and next as our candidate interviews continue. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. The producer is Selena Reeder. Assistant producer, Harper Carlton. Technical director, Carlos Lopez-Cornu. I'm Nick Swartzel. Thanks for listening.